Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
It's good that the Bulls are in a play-in game.
Could be now or never for the Bulls.
Kobe
lets it fly. D3. Got it! Put him in the hole! Put him in the Hall of Fame. Kobe White has been unbelievable tonight. And this crowd saying, Kobe, 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 you gotta love it. Ball game over. Bulls win. Bulls win. Bulls win. 131-116. And life remains for the Chicago Bulls.
They win. They get to play another game to get in.
We know Miami. They know us.
You're looking for anything at this point if you're the Bulls or the Bulls fan. So you want to win two games and play and extend the season every day that is possible.
You just got to come in ready to compete and, leave it all out there on the floor.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Put them in the Hall of Fame. Put them in the Hall.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 Score. I don't want to sound like a broken record. I don't want to do last year's show. But is this Kobe White's tape? Did we see a changing of the guard?
Morning, Mully. Yeah, big Thursday. What a night at the United Center. Kobe White, career high, 42 points.
42.
Although they say the records don't count, that one's going to leave a mark, historic or not, official or not. That was quite a performance, and this is still DeMar DeRozan's team, but Kobe White steps forward and does what he needs to do. Bulls win, Bulls win. It is the same thing that happened a year ago. They are back at the same stage. Better situation this year.
Yeah.
Better and more inviting atmosphere in Miami this time around because of the Jimmy Butler injury, but the Bulls, give them credit. They did what they needed to do. We said going in, and even tweeted this out last night. This is a team you could see easily losing by 15 or winning by 15. And look at the score. They won by 15.
Yeah. It's really, I'll tell you what, KC tweeted at one point, like, where's this been all year? Like, the way they were moving the ball and they were throwing the ball in and kicking it out for a three. I'm telling you, it was a different, it's like they changed something. And I don't know if it's just that Atlanta is not a great defensive team, and God bless Trae Young, but he's not much of a defensive player. And I was very impressed by the way the Bulls got through that game. And then, as you say, the opportunity is there.
Mm-hmm.
They go to Miami for Friday night's game, and guess who may be more injured than we know.
Yeah, he's got an MCL injury.
Not Alex Caruso.
No, Jimmy Butler.
That's possible too.
Jimmy Butler could miss Friday night, and he could be out if the Heat are able to advance indefinitely, because that's the way our guy Sham Charania reported last night.
Yep.
That's good news. You know, you take advantage of opportunities, and you play as long as you possibly can. Yeah, we kind of kid about the Bulls earning the right to be swept by the Celtics, but if you're the Bulls as an organization – Billy Donovan as a coach, you want to take this as far as you can. And that's what's ahead of you. They have Friday night in Miami. If they win, they play Sunday in Boston. That's a great thing to look forward to, and this is a team playing with a lot of confidence. I don't know where it's been. We have seen it before, though. They've beaten good teams. We didn't know if they're going to be the team that lost to the Pistons twice or the team that beat the teams at the top of the Eastern Conference a couple times. So I don't think you complain. You take it, you go, and boy, it was fun.
I'll tell you what, it was a really fantastic game to watch, partly because the crowd, you know, the MVP of the game is probably the crowd.
They into were it. Yep.
So into it. It was a great atmosphere. It made me kind of fantasize, wouldn't it be great to have the Celtics come in here, maybe the Bulls get a split, and then that crowd goes, and next thing you know, there are jumpers raining in from like the fifth row.
Well, I think, yeah, you want to play fantasy basketball for a moment. Right. You could – it's easy to envision. It's not inconceivable. Say the Bulls fall down 0-2 to the Celtics. They come back to the United Center. That crowd will be alive. That crowd will be welcoming, and that crowd will be a factor if they are indeed here for what would be game three?
Yeah.
3 and 4?
Yeah.
So that's not hard to envision. I liked what they had to say. Richard Jefferson was on – the ESPN broadcast, and yes, he was very complimentary of the Chicago crowd and saying that when the Bulls are playing at a high level and the crowd at the United Center is alive, there's a few better places in basketball to be. That was pretty cool to hear from from a guy who spent a lot of years in the league.
I will say this. Chicago has had their ups and downs the last few years, but there are not many better basketball crowds that you will ever run into. You're almost rooting for the Chicago Bulls to have a high-level team because you know the environment here is electric.
It's a very accurate statement, and let's hope that the officials are also rooting for the Bulls when that crowd goes nuts.
It was quite a compliment, I think. And it's so nice. You look at the Bulls fan base, and two things are true. Been kind of beaten down by the lack of playoff success, and it hasn't really been a lot to cheer for legitimately in a long time. But they still turn out because they're always entertained. This Bulls team, among all the things, they're exasperating, they're inconsistent, but they are entertaining, and they did it again last night.
Listen, I mean, again, that first quarter was as much fun as I've had watching a
40
first
points.
Quarter basketball. They were fantastic.
Best quarter, highest point total in the first quarter all season long.
Great way to start your playoff run.
Playoff run, whatever the case may be. Billy Donovan had his team ready to go. It was a coaching win. Give Kobe White credit. DeMar DeRozan was smart. Vooch got going. He had a double-double, 24 and 12. Alex Caruso, before he got injured, I think that he was a factor. And Ayo Dosunmu, we didn't know if he was going to play. He was hurt. He came out. He scored 19 points. And now he's the Trae Young stopper.
He really was.
He's 8-2 lifetime against Trae Young.
He was fantastic. And Ayo, great to see. Andre Drummond, I don't know about, because when he came into the game, it looked like he was trying to help the Hawks. He literally knocks Alex Caruso out of the
What
game.
Is with him and teammate collisions?
That was so awkward.
Come on.
And like, you watch it a couple times, and whoever's doing the broadcast is like, how did they not see each other? Well, yeah.
How did they not see each other?
He's the
same guy that didn't realize what Torrey Craig was doing and trying to bounce a dunk to himself. Come on, Andre Drummond, a little better awareness. But
I honestly think that was the dunk was not his fault.
Okay.
You know, if you run with a guy and he puts the ball.
But last night, what was he doing?
The backboard. Last night, he was just clumsy.
He basically got Caruso's way.
Oh, my God.
And is it true, though? KC cleared that up in his post-game reporting. Alex Caruso, the ankle that Andre Drummond stepped on wasn't the ankle that kept him out of action.
So he injured his other ankle.
Yes.
Okay.
I have to get to the bottom of that.
I'm just curious. Is that good or bad when your good ankle becomes your bad ankle because your bad ankle isn't as bad as your new bad ankle?
I think it's bad, but I think whatever Alex Caruso can do to get onto the court, he will do it. He's such a factor when he's on the court defensively, makes their team different, shares the basketball, and hits some big shots. But Kobe White, this was his night. He was feeling it, 15 for 21 from the field. The guy was hitting his threes and attacking downhill, as Billy Donovan said, and doing all the things that complete players do at both ends of the court. This was his night.
Yeah.
The Kobe White game.
It was the Kobe White game. It was also like the Dustin Rhodes scratch out his name game. You were wrong on the under, and you were wrong on the Bulls. That hurt. A lot of people complaining on the text screen, Dustin. your advice of you didn't you you said there's no way the Bulls can score that many points. what was the over under you went under? I mean, there are people upset about it.
The over under was 222, I believe. Might have been 222, and when they scored 40 points in the first quarter, you knew that was not going to be the case.
That's a 40 bag.
It's a what?
It's a what?
I think it's a 40 bag.
It's a 40 bag. Yeah.
What is that?
40 bag.
What's a 40 bag?
Bag of 40 points.
That's a 40 bag.
Bag of 40 points.
It's a what?
A bag of like 40-ounce drinks.
Delivered to the Bulls in the first quarter when they were doing everything right. Now, a word about Trae Young. He was playing with that protective brace on his left hand. They were better without him.
Well,
not only last night.
Underline that statement.
They were better without him, which is he's their Zach LaVine issue. He's their guy that you wonder, immensely talented, but how does he fit and does he affect winning? And last night he did not. He was making bad decisions. And I think they isolated that at the end of the half, I believe, when he made the behind-the-back pass after making the silly gamble defensively. And Trae Young was more – it's the most deceiving stat line you're going to see. 22 and 10, 22 points, 10 assists. But he was more bad than good for the Hawks last night.
Yeah, no, he was not good. He's not – in terms of defense, I don't even know if you can articulate it. It's not just terrible. It's just, like, otherworldly bad. He's really awful. And then you look at his production, no. That they were better without him. I agree with that statement.
He's an unwilling defender, I think you would say.
There you go.
He's an unwilling defender.
He's a willing defender.
Casey Johnson says this, Mully. According to Bulls PR, Caruso's injury is a reaggravation of his left ankle sprain. Drummond stepped on Caruso's right foot, and that initially slowed him, but Caruso exited in the third period with a left ankle injury. Uh-oh.
Oh, my God. So he's now got two bad ankles?
He's got two bad ankles and one big teammate that can't get out of his way.
Oh, man. That was rough. Yeah, I mean, look, if you were making an exchange, and I'm not saying they are, but I guess you could say that the Heat without Jimmy is a greater problem than the Bulls without Alex Caruso.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Jimmy Butler not playing for the Heat on Friday night is not only something that resonates in Chicago because the Bulls are next, but there are teams probably, maybe the Celtics, maybe every other team in the playoffs looking at that Heat team much differently today. If he's compromised, Heat culture or not, they're beatable.
We had a little knee tweak, and we'll see what these tests got tomorrow.
Are you expecting to go for an MRI, or is that the next step?
And that's the next step.
Is that a concern once you go for an MRI? That it's, is it, in other words, can you feel in your body, does it feel serious, like, uh-oh, this could be something more? Or
I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but, I mean, I hope that I'm fine. I hope I wake up tomorrow and I can still stick and move, but, you know, right now I can't say that that's the case. I mean, I fell, and he landed, and my knee just didn't do well, I guess. I don't know, but it's not a good feeling, I can tell you that.
Final play of the first quarter in Philly.
And he played 40 minutes. Just saying. That's when he got hurt. So did he do damage after that?
He scored a total of 12 points the rest of the way, 3 for 14, and the key offense was much different as he was compromised. Without Tyler Hero, they would not have even been in a situation to make that game competitive, I think. They're challenged offensively without Jimmy Butler. That goes without saying. You take away anybody's superstar and they're going to be different. But I don't know if you can come back from something like an MCL 2 days later. If it were next week, it'd be different. If it were Sunday even, you feel like maybe he could. I think Friday night, he may try. Jimmy Butler's a tough guy. He'll try, I would imagine. But it's an opportunity for the Bulls. No doubt about it. Big opportunity.
Have I ever told you that you're my hero? But you're my Tyler Hero.
He was lighting it up last night.
He was very good.
That kid can shoot.
Yeah.
He's no kid anymore. Man,
no.
He can shoot. And he's going to be a problem. You know, this is going to happen too. People are going to look at that roster and like, who's he? Where'd he come from? Yeah, what Division III program? Is he in matter. Danny's book?
Right.
My goodness. Because they're going to have some Division III guy that's going to light it up. And they're like, wow, Heat culture did it again. Let's hope that isn't the case. But you know they got somebody there.
Hero's so good that they could lose the Struz juice.
Put that Struz juice in it and knock it back.
He's not there any longer. That's he can't right. do that. He's not there to ruin anybody's off season to exact some revenge. He's still in the playoffs, by the way.
Oh no, favorite Cavs. Player. He's still
Cavs still in the playoffs. I will be following Max Struz closely.
He is
but he's
still
not
my
be,
hero.
He's your hero.
He's like hero. He can shoot like hero.
Put that Struz juice in it and knock it back.
Friday night, South Florida. Bulls taking the talents to South Beach.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
It's a great place to go.
It's a great place to go. And then maybe with any luck at all, and with if they play like they did last night, Friday night, they'll be in Boston on Sunday.
The Cubs are home.
Yes.
And they deserve kind of a hero's welcome, in my opinion.
They do. They deserve a Tyler hero's welcome. There you go. Well played. And let's hope that that hero's welcome includes a lot of rain. They could use a rain out.
Okay.
They could use Mother Nature.
Have we planned a rain out? It's supposed to rain at 6 tonight.
Let's plan the rain out. I think the weather forecast is a little spotty. You look at the radar and it says, you know, the chance of rain.
Dustin's our rain man.
Well, I think that would be good for the Cubs bullpen.
I'll check in with my guy, Billy, let you know what he says.
He knows all about the rain.
Well, let's keep an eye on that because they could use a day of rest.
But then doesn't that lead to a doubleheader?
Maybe not. When did the Marlins come back to town? I need to check the schedule. Check the schedule.
I'm checking.
See what happens because I think you could do that, right?
I hope so.
Because look at the bullpen. They fly in Wisnasty.
Oh, I mean.
They fly him in from Iowa.
That guy arrives an hour before the game.
Gets ready.
Wow.
Are you ready? Yes. He nods. Give me the ball. I'll do anything you want. Wisniewski becomes Wisnasty again.
Oh, he was great.
The best pitching performance of the season, according to
Craig Counsell said that.
How about that?
That was unbelievable.
And then he gets on a plane. He's flying back to Chicago. What a whirlwind day. But, you know, he's young. He'll sleep. He can sleep later. I love the anecdote that they were trying to reach him.
Yeah.
And they couldn't because they kept calling him. His phone fell off his bed or something, and they couldn't hear it, so they couldn't reach him. Matt Mervis, the roommate, has to wake him up. Hey, man.
Call the manager.
Hey, man. What? They were looking for you.
You're leaving in 3 hours or 4 hours or whatever.
And you're pitching later.
Yeah.
And you're going to save the day.
That was a fantastic performance. He flies from Iowa to Chicago to Arizona. He got there like an hour before the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready to go.
Great story.
Great story.
26-year-old right-hander, really had an up and down rookie season. He was a rookie last year, right?
Yes, he was.
Officially a rookie?
Yes.
And Wisniewski comes in yesterday. And again, he's another young pitcher they think has some potential. He's added with Ben Brown now to this staff. How long he stays, we'll see. But they needed that yesterday. They really did.
You know, I know we're not going to talk about the White Sox, but Jonathan Cannon made his debut, and that was after Nick Nastrini's debut. And we've seen like Ben Brown debut. When you look at all these young pitchers, there's a hopefulness for their careers, not necessarily for the White Sox.
I think so. I think it's a good way to put it. You look around baseball and you see a lot of young pitchers who are flashing right now and having, you know, glimpses of really things that they would consider greatness. I don't know if they're going to be great pitchers, but the Sox did something, I think, the first time in since the 1930s.
Yeah.
When they had 32. Guys making their debuts in back-to-back games.
And they were both very good.
I think Jonathan Cannon deserved better.
Jonathan Cannon was fantastic. And, you know, when you give away outs, that's how you give away runs. And the only run he gave up, it was just so infuriating. He has two outs in the second. He's going for the third out. Guy hits a pop-up. I mean, it was, you know, guy hit a healthy ball to center field where there's no way you're not going to catch that, though. I don't care who's the center fielder. Only, unfortunately, Dominic Fletcher
slips. Yeah, slips.
Misplays the ball, and it lands next to him. So you give up a double. The next batter gets a single, and now you've given up an extra out, and you're charged with an earned run. And it's just cruel to
baseball
the young
can
kid.
Be cruel.
It's
Baseball's a cruel game.
But he went five innings. He did. That's all he gave up. And they actually, Paul DeJong, how about that? He had his moment.
Five hits yesterday.
Yes, both games.
His batting average climbed like 100 points.
And he hit a home run. Two-run homer in the first game.
You know, Cannon, he is a rifle-armed young man.
Cannon reminds me of your John Garland comparison.
Ben Brown is John Garland. How can Jonathan Cannon be John Garland?
Jonathan Cannon throws a lot of ground balls. Mm-hmm. That's all the comparison I mean. Jonathan Cannon's 6'6", but I was amazed he threw
prototype.
He threw a sweeper, a slider, a screwball, any pitch that begins with an S. He threw the changeup.
The South slider?
He's not the South slider.
The South slider?
Yeah. We have a texter who says, in honor of the Bulls, West Side, stand up!
Oh, boy.
That's pretty good.
No. Say it with me. South Side, stand up!
But yesterday was cringing. A game where North Side, stand up!
I would hope that there would be a different
East Side
little trademark there.
You're the lake.
Okay.
No, there is an East Side down. At least they call it the East Side down for Dolex here.
I'm glad you enjoyed the Jonathan Cannon experience because he was very good.
I don't know if I see
John Garland or not, but I think it's something to think about. Kopech was not good, kind of blew it. But the Sox, at least they got a victory. They needed that badly. Dustin comes in with some information. The Marlins do not come back to Wrigley Field. We'll have to think about that one then, how they could make that up. But I want you to do some more research. When was the last time the Cubs, the Sox, and the Bulls won a game in the same day?
Get Chris Camp on that.
I'm just saying. It doesn't happen a lot.
I mean, honestly, the guy gets up at like 1 in the morning. He catches up on everything. He comes in here. He does the pregame show. And he's just taking a breath. And now here are your assignments.
I'm giving him assignments. I want to know. I'm shot out of a Jonathan Cannon. I want to know.
When's the last time the Cubs and the White Sox won on the same day?
have they done it this year? And then you
yesterday
throw in the
was
Bulls.
The first time.
There's only three possible days
exactly
that the Cubs and Sox could have won on the same day, and then were the Bulls playing on that day? And then if it goes back to last,
and then
year,
how about the Hawks?
Well, the Hawks didn't.
But
win.
They
didn't win last night.
In fact, I could look that up too.
But no, Dustin, that's okay.
They did not win last night.
They play tonight. Season's over.
This is it. For once in your life. Here's your miracle. It'll be fun to see all the young guys skating around.
Yeah.
I will tune in briefly.
Last chance to see the Hawks for a long time, and then Connor Bedard goes away, which makes me sad. Then we start to focus on the draft. But the NHL playoffs right around the corner. A lot of good hockey to be played. I wanted Austin Matthews to get number 70 last night. He did not. So that's kind of a disappointment. A lot of hockey history being made this week.
My daughter is graduating from college in Montreal, McGill University. But I say we still do a Montreal trip to see Bedard play there next year. I think we make it in.
The Canadiens?
Why not?
At the Bell Center?
Yes. Nice spot.
Very historic spot.
Yes.
If Connor Bedard is playing hockey, it's not going to be hard to get me in the building.
Okay.
I definitely enjoyed Sunday. Anytime you get a chance to see one of the best young players in any league, you take advantage of that. And we're fortunate here in Chicago now. As we said, you look around, there's some young talent. There's some young budding stars. We saw one last night in Coby White. You know, he can add to the list. I didn't mention him yesterday when we were talking about adding Cardoso and Angel Reese and Bedard and Frankie Nazer. And you look at the Cubs' young talent, and you look at the Bears about to get Caleb Williams and maybe Roma Dunze.
Well, that is so much fun.
There's a lot of young talent, and you can add Coby White to that list. Ayo Dosunmu, another guy. Coming into his own, very popular because he's a local guy, made good. So,
no doubt.
Fun times right now.
312-644-6767. We're going to do the pick six, which means we're going to break down all the big stories that are out there. We're going to pick them apart, and we're going to chew them over. We'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The South Slider.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
It's Pick Six with Mullion Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mullion Haw starts now.
What did last night's Bulls game mean in terms of your season conclusions? Do you agree with Casey Johnson, who told us yesterday the only way the season was a success is if the Bulls had finished sixth in the Eastern Conference?
Well, I did agree with Casey. I did think that this season already had kind of turned wrong. And that started the year with that. We knew the first 20 games were going to be tough. I don't think we realized how bad they were going to be, and they really dug themselves a hole. But I'm telling you, last night, it was fantastic. It was just a reminder of this town and how we support people. And there was tons of support. Chanting of Kobe. I mean, the fans were so into the game. That was maybe the highlight of it. Seriously. How great. You know, they played great basketball. It was wildly entertaining. But the crowd added to my enjoyment. It was just super exciting to watch. We have to get up early. And you can't spend a lot of time messing around, but I found myself watching way too much of that game. And it was just, I thought, well, at halftime, I got to go to bed. And I am kind of laying there, let's just see what goes on in the beginning of the third quarter. And I'm back up. And I mean, it was just tons of fun. They played a great game of basketball. Kobe White, that's the changing of the guard. Remember last year's storyline? Does that mean Kobe demands a trade? Next year, I don't know, but he was phenomenal. They were really good. It sets them in motion to maybe have another home game, and that would be phenomenal.
Can we save this question and run it back on Monday? Because we won't be here on Saturday or Sunday. Well, David will be, but they won't talk basketball.
Bruce doesn't want to get into the
Bulls. No basketball Saturday morning.
They'll have Michael Jordan as a guest.
Talking baseball only. Let's enjoy the win. Let's celebrate the win. Let's enjoy that there will be another Bulls basketball game. And then let's worry about what our conclusions are for the season. Would we have wanted them to have been better? Of course. Could they have been better? Of course. But as Billy Donovan said after, I believe, the last regular season game, and I count this as a playoff game. I also count these stats. We can get into that whole thing later if we want to. There's a lot of money sitting on the bench. Max LaVine, Lonzo Ball, sitting on the bench. A lot of cash. A lot of cabbage sitting on that bench. We can get into all this later. Time to celebrate, not reach conclusions.
All right.
It's not concluded.
God bless you.
Stop and smell the roses. I think that's good. And I don't mean Derek. I think when you look at this Bulls victory last night, it puts you in a position to change your mind a little bit, or to open your mind up to the idea that if they win Friday in Miami, what this season represents is incremental progress. They will be further along than they were a year ago. They will be one step further along. They will be in the real playoffs, not just a play-in version. So I think I do want to reserve judgment. That is something we tend not to do, but I can see why you'd want to do that, especially after a night as rousing as last night was. Coby White attacking the rim. Coby White hitting threes with a career night. Ayo Dosunmu playing through pain, shutting down Trae Young and adding 19 points himself. The young backcourt duo doing what they're doing, making you feel good about the future of the Bulls. And it's been a long time, probably since we've been able to say that without cynicism. And they still may return Friday night. They go down there, lay an egg, and they look like the Bulls team that lost to the Pistons. And that is something they're capable of doing.
Or Washington.
Or what? Yeah, the Wizards. Pick whatever putrid outing that comes to your mind first when you think about the inconsistency of this Bulls team. And that's what they're capable of doing Friday night. I don't expect it. I don't think we all in this, the morning after, the afterglow, if you will, we don't expect it. And we don't want to talk about it or see it. But if they do it, we won't be surprised. We're prepared. But if they do win, then I think that we can allow ourselves the fact that the idea they might have made a little progress this year.
Great use of the word rousing, because that is perfectly correct.
That's a big question.
That's the voice of Bruce Levine, 725 with you guys this morning. How do you rate the Cubs' 10-day trip out west with another series win following yesterday's 5-3 victory over the Diamondbacks in Arizona? Maybe it could have been even better, but what does a winning road trip say about this team?
It says this team is resilient. It says this team has quality depth. It says this team has a resourceful manager that is making use of the healthy pitchers available to him. Yesterday was a patchwork effort. You bring in Wesneski from Iowa, you fly him in the morning, and all of a sudden he's the guy supplying the best pitching performance of the season. Craig Counsell is mixing and matching and doing what he can. This is a big deal, the fact that they came home from this road trip 5-4, and it could have been worse. Sure, it could have been better. Losing that game to the Padres was a punch to the gut, and it was one of those losses that you wonder how much it would linger, and you wonder how much they would let that dictate the course of the rest of the road trip. They went into Seattle. They won 2 out of 3. Those are tough wins. And then they go to the defending National League champions into Arizona, and they beat the Diamondbacks 2 out of 3. Not the same Diamondback team, but this Cub team has some resolve, is very resilient, got some timely hitting. Thank goodness Cody Bellinger. Maybe the Cub fans there chanting his name, because there were a lot of Cub fans there. Hayden Wesneski got a standing ovation from the visiting Cub fans. That's how loud they were out there, and that's why they were excited. This was a very strong road trip, and it says a lot about what the season could become.
It does say a lot about what the season could become. I'll rate it a 6 out of a 10, maybe a 7 out of a 10. I don't want to give the skipper too much credit for this. I mean, boy, he had me scratching my head yesterday. Boy, I mean, how do you start Talkman and Master Boney in the corner outfield slots? How do you give the ball to Drew Smyly at the end of that game? And then he gives up a home run. And I was, language was about to be expressed.
Was he the last man standing, Smyly?
No. There were other guys that hadn't picked. I mean, again, Hayden Wesneski saved the bullpen.
Yep.
And then you're result of saving the bullpen is bringing in, I mean, listen, you weren't going to give the ball to Adbert Alzolay. I get that. But there were a lot of other guys that you could give the ball to. And again, I'm sure the metrics told him that that's what he was supposed to do. But boy, that really could have gotten really interesting. So great overall series. They get the Marlins for 4. I actually don't want a doubleheader, David. So I'm actually hoping they can find a way to get this one in tonight over at Wrigley Field. And plus, I'd like a game to talk about tomorrow morning, because mercifully for Sox fans and for us, I guess, the Sox get a day off tonight.
All right.
I got to tell you, The Cubs have been worth the price of admission. They've been wildly entertaining. They do a lot of things well. Even when they lose, as infuriated as we all were yesterday, right, when we came in here and they had just lost a game they should have won, it's still, like, you know, top-level compelling. It's still very interesting and stimulating and all those wonderful words that keep you kind of entertained during a baseball season. I think they're just maybe as fun a team to watch as there is in baseball. And I think part of that is the depth of the team. Part of it is, you know, they're doing – say what you want about Craig Counsell. I know some people have complained at different moments. He's making a lot of chicken salad with this group, and he's really putting together some good decisions. I have really enjoyed – the start of their season. That was the kind of road trip where you could go out and you could kind of put yourself in a hole. And they didn't do that. They ended up with a winning road trip. And that, those are good teams, and you're out west, and it's a 10-day trip, and it's the beginning of the year. That's tough stuff to play 9 games in 10 days. But to come home, and I honestly believe that they get home, and the energy, the kind of rousing nature of the crowd, if you will, is waiting for them. And even if they're tired, even if there are issues, Destino, and you don't want to rain out, they're going to answer the bell. I really feel like they've done
momentum?
Momentum is the next day starting pitcher. Okay. I'm saying that the crowd and the electricity and that's going to add to their energy level. Even if they're tired, my opinion.
It's an interesting question, I think.
Is Hayden Wesniewski the answer to the Cubs' bullpen problem, or is he just a potential partial answer? Did you generally like the transactions before the game?
Yes, I think Wesniewski was fantastic. He was really good, and it was very difficult circumstances. I was waiting for Dustin to make a joke about guys flying cross country need a day off, and instead he's got like an hour to get ready before he knows he's going to go in and he's got to start warming up. He's got a lot of bounce to him, though. He's an energy guy, and he's a young man blessed with that kind of young man energy, and I thought we saw it yesterday. I don't know that he is the answer in the bullpen. I think he is a potential answer. I think that he can help you with some long relief. And, you know, he could do a spot start, although it doesn't look like they need anything like that right now. But that's a weapon. That's a guy that deserves to be in the major leagues as far as the transition. Listen, Luke Little had to go. I mean, he came up, he did his job, it's time to go back down. And Wesniewski was just phenomenal. Just, I mean, to have the manager call it the best performance they've had at pitching this year, that's pretty awesome.
I mean, just imagine if they had done this move one day earlier. After the long night with the 11-inning extra inning game, imagine what could have been.
But they wouldn't, because they used Luke Little in that.
But you wouldn't have used Luke Little.
But they did the move because they did use Luke Little. I mean,
they did the move because the bullpen stinks out loud right now.
Not
it wasn't just because of Luke Little. I mean, they also sent Daniel Palencia.
Because he was used to.
Right.
Yeah.
This was a move that was strategic and specific.
But those guys had been used before. I'm saying you could have. My point is, you could have made this move 24 hours earlier.
Yeah, I'd win the lottery if I knew what the future was going to tell me, too. But, I mean, yeah, Dustin, Luke Little and Palencia weren't that bad before they were that bad. Right.
And it was a move for that game. But what I'm saying is, I think was nasty deserves to stay.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed. He deserves to stay. I think he could also potentially help out with the Kyle Hendricks problem, right? Like, maybe Kyle Hendricks is two trips through the order, and then Wesniewski comes in.
Okay.
Maybe that's the next part of this.
Sunday's plan.
Could be.
This is all going to take some getting used to. We talk about it all the time. Craig Counsell doesn't really care for your definition of roles on pitching staffs. They're not starters. They're not relievers. They're out-getters. And he's going to condition us to look at it that way. It's like the NBA. It's positionless. Well, you know, everybody can play everything. You got five guys, and you just get them to play together. Much the way you look at the NBA is maybe non-traditional, you're looking at Major League pitching staffs as non-traditional, and Craig Counsell's at the forefront of this. So Wesneski better stay a while because he can get outs, as we saw. Now, I don't know about Colton Brewer being added or selected from AAA. The Cubs add another Brewer. I don't know if that's a good idea, but wow. I don't know anything about him. But so he's just a live arm, and maybe he'll get a look. But I don't have any problem with them doing what they did before the game and not doing it 24 hours earlier, because if you had said this, they're going to send that, they should send down Palencia and Luke Little before they imploded that night, I think you'd have said, oh, what are you doing there? Luke Little, he's promising. So they're doing what they need to do and manipulating the roster accordingly, and I think that you have to give him the counsel, I'm talking about, the benefit of the doubt right now.
And a texter checks in, they could easily have gone 7-2 on that trip, and that is accurate. And Dustin, if you heard us and some of his meltdowns over it, that they probably should have. They have had some bad losses.
It's baseball.
Has given up. That, yeah, you're exactly right.
You know, that's a really good question.
Ooh, that guy. All they got to do is touch home base a little bit more, and they'll win some more. I couldn't believe watching his post game yesterday. Did Jonathan Cannon deserve better in the first MLB start of his career? Were you most disappointed by the run support, the defense behind him, or the bullpen, specifically Michael Kopech? Did Cannon do enough to stick in this rotation?
Well, Jonathan Cannon definitely deserved better. Disappointing outing by Michael Kopech. I guess he was due. That was the difference in that loss, no doubt about that. And you felt like it was in good hands. The Sox having that kind of performance from Jonathan Cannon after a promising effort from Nick Mastrini gives you something that we have seen in short supply outside of the milkshake at Guaranteed Rate Field, a little hope, a little excitement, a little encouragement that things are worth going to. There's a reason to go see the Sox, which we're running out of them. And if you saw the end of the doubleheader yesterday, I'm not exactly in the minority saying that. Less than 1,000 people at that ballpark. The Oakland White Sox. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, it was
and
bad.
It's too bad because I think that shows you where they are. But with efforts like Jonathan Cannon's and Nick Nastrini's, it shows you where they maybe can go. So I think he deserves another shot, yes.
Yeah. I mean, of course. This rotate. I mean, why wouldn't he get another? I mean, I guess that the question on the question would be, why wouldn't you give this? He's already up. Why would you send him back without having? I mean, you could send him back because the next time out, he's not very good, I guess. But yes, of course you would. These are reasons to attend a Sox game. This is a reason to tune into a Sox game, is some of this young pitching talent. Really disappointed in Michael Kopech that he wants to be in competitive situations. He has said that. I've been on Michael Kopech's side. So for him to not deliver yesterday, yes, that was unfortunate for Cannon, who did enough for sure to stick around in that White Sox rotation.
You know, one of the great things about Jonathan Cannon is that he's 23 years old. So we had talked about this idea that at age 24, when Nick Nastrini came up, I know Garrett Crochet is 24, but he's a younger version of 24. He's the youngest guy on the roster. Well, now Cannon is the youngest guy on the roster. My point is, they have a lot of age on this roster. You want to score a run? You need to score. Hey, Tommy Pham's on the way. We're going to get the last gasp of his career and maybe see him traded at the deadline. This is not a young team. This is not a team. You know, Martin Maldonado, go look at his numbers. That guy's 37 years old, and he looks every bit of it. He's batting like 0.65. Just look at his line if you want to know what's wrong in the world. Again, 37 years old. It's not like you're going out there and watching a bunch of young players. And that's kind of, that's really what's, you know, Kevin Pillar's 35, Robbie Grossman, they brought him in 34. I'm just saying, this is not like the young whippersnaps trying to get going so they can all be getting older together. This is you're throwing guys out there and you're trying to get through a season, and we know you're going to maybe win 60, maybe not win 60. The point is, it's going to be a rough year, and it's nice to see young people.
I'm taking Paige. Next question.
How would you describe this exchange between the Indianapolis Star columnist, Greg Doyle, and the newest member of the Indiana Fever, Caitlin Clark, at the press conference introducing Clark officially to the Indiana media?
Hi, Caitlin. Greg Doyle, Indy Star. Real quick, let me do this.
You like that?
I like that you're here. I like that you're here.
I do that at my family after every game, so.
Okay, well, let's start doing it to me, and we'll be able to get along just fine. So, question is.
So, the question is, should there be any response to what happened yesterday?
Well, he responded. He apologized. He caught, like, tons of grief. He was given the heart sign to her. I mean, you stand up at a news conference and you give the heart sign to the best young player in the WNBA and someone that is loaded with all sorts of attention. What are you thinking? And then in the course of your exchange, I know he's trying to be funny, but oh, you give that to me, and we're really it was beyond kind of creepy. I don't think he meant to be creepy. I don't know what he meant. You know, Greg Doyle's a good guy. You don't really think of him as kind of this, you know, weird sexist animal. But good God, was that a stupid exchange. And just a ton of, there's all sorts of problems with it. It was shocking because it was so unprofessional. And I was utterly surprised by it. And the response to it was just, I mean, a lot of people got upset about it. And, you know, again, he tried to apologize. I don't know. It's the kind of thing that gets you in serious trouble.
After working with you two guys for quite some time, and I'm grateful for that in all honesty, I think I've learned that you guys from your newspaper backgrounds have told us when we've talked about things that have gone wrong at press conferences is that the writer or the reporter, one of the first rules, and there's a lot of these first rules, is you as the writer or reporter are there to cover a story. You are not supposed to become the story. And he, Greg Doyle, became the story. He was trying to be cute. He was trying to be funny. He flopped. He was bad. It fell flat. I don't think he was hitting on her as some people out there in the ex Twitter sphere were suggesting. I don't think he was coming on to her or anything like that. It's something that she does on the court. He was expressing like he feels maybe that he is talking for the state of Indiana and the city of Indianapolis as the lead columnist down there. But then he apologized on X. That was clumsy. And then he wrote a column again. Instead of talking about what it means for Caitlin Clark to be a member of the media, talking about what he did wrong in introducing Caitlin Clark to himself in the city of Indy. So it's just, it's bad, but I don't feel like the guy should lose his job for that. Should he catch some flack for it? Of course.
Oh, he has.
He has, and he deserves to catch it. But I don't think this was anything him coming on to her or anything like that.
That's up to Gannett and to the Indianapolis Star. What he did was unprofessional, inappropriate, and deserves some sort of response. You can't make yourself the story in that way. You typically don't want to make yourself the story at all. But he crossed a line. You've got to understand and read the room. I don't care if he's the most respected columnist in that market or if he's as successful as he has been. He's unorthodox. I personally like him. I know him. I've known him for a very long time. 25 years, but I don't think that he can do what he did without expecting some sort of recourse here. We've seen people fired for less. I'm not saying he should lose his job, but I think he should face a little bit more than just social media backlash. The fact that he apologized, it was a clumsy apology. The fact that he wrote a column after that, He tried to monetize his misogyny. That's bad when you do that. You bring more attention to yourself. We know you're sorry. It doesn't take you 600 words to tell me why. This was crossing a line. This was a bad look, embarrassing for the media. And I am sorry for that this happened, because he is a talented, immensely talented, gifted writer. You just don't need to do this. So the lesson to young journalists or people in our business, it's not about you. It never has to be about you. And when you make it about you, be very careful, because you're going to be unprepared for what could come next. And this came next, and whatever happens to him, he earned and he deserves.
I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs, and he's our guy. And he suggested that the Bears might consider a punter with one of their two remaining picks after the first round. How realistic is that? And would you prefer a reliable punter over a project pass rusher or a mid-round receiver?
I have really contemplated this a lot. I have fallen into the Mully trap, and I have wondered if the punter on a team that values defense to the extent that the Bears do could be considered a weapon. And we talk about offensive weapons all the time. We rarely talk about defensive weapons. We talk about defensive specialists, a third down pass rusher, a nickelback, a guy who is maybe good at covering running backs as a linebacker. We seldom talk about punters. They could justify using one of their four draft picks on a punter. I'm not as against it as I once was, kind of facetiously and, you know, trying to come around to the terms that kickers are people too. And if the Bears use a draft pick on a punter, specifically Torrey Taylor, I will probably applaud their ingenuity and their ambition and what they're trying to do to be different. Because that it would be different when you have four draft picks and one of them's on a punter. That's different, but it doesn't sound as crazy to me as it once did.
Yeah, I mean, the punter is a starter. The punter is out there, unfortunately, right? 3, 4, 5 times a game trying to flip the field. But again, if you're drafting Caleb, if Caleb Williams is so special that you would turn down multiple first-round future picks and a second-round pick this year, then you shouldn't need a punter. Because you shouldn't be punting, or you should be adding another tight end. You should be adding an offensive lineman. I would rather add an offensive lineman at that point to work and grow with him than a punter. I mean, I'm not against it, but it feels like a luxury. It almost feels kind of, dare I say, who is the kid from Northern Illinois, the running back that they picked?
Garrett Wolf.
Garrett Wolf. Remember when they got cute? They got cute. They drafted Garrett Wolf to be like the Swiss Army knife guy. Like, the Bears aren't in a position. We talk about draft capital all the time on this show. So how in the world would you use a punter when you've got 5 or 4 or 5 pieces of draft capital to work with? And again, if the Messiah is coming in Caleb Williams, then you don't need a punter.
You know, there's one punter in the Hall of Fame. It's Ray Guy. And he was with Oakland when they were a Super Bowl contender every year. I think the problem with Torrey Taylor is that his specialization, he is so good at it. He might be the best punter, the best college punter that I've seen. And you look at him coming into the league. Look at the Bears and look at their numbers in terms of punting. This guy has unbelievable accuracy. He can pinpoint where the ball's going. He can stop it on a dime. He can help your defense with field position. He can boom the hell out of the ball if that's what you need. It's a really legitimate weapon. Now, you know, a lot of people wouldn't use a draft pick. You know, I think a 4th-round pick is kind of where punters go. You don't see them go much earlier. I want to say that San Francisco gave up a pretty good draft pick to get a punter a while back. It, you know, Dustin, you may look at it and say, and I'm not saying that it is atop their list of needs, but I'm saying if you're sitting there and you're looking at a specialist who can turn a game, who has the ability to kind of make you a different team. I don't really care how good your offense is and how good your defense is. This could help field position. It could help you win. And you know what I keep wondering, and I know this is insane, but I keep wondering, does this guy know how to kick off with the new rules and all the stuff going on? Could you have brought him in and found a secret weapon that people don't know about? He's from Melbourne, Australia. I'm sure he's kicked every kind of ball 100 million times. He's from, you know, the goofy game with the white jacket umpire pining when they make a point.
Aussie Rules Football?
Aussie Rules Football, yeah. Which I've been to the Melbourne Cricket Ground and seen Hawthorne play a team in that particular sport. Absolutely hilarious. And they really go at it. But I wonder if he could help on kickoffs too.
One of the first things I remember watching on ESPN when we got cable. The beekeeper/pharmacist.
That's very well said. All right. We've got an extra point, and it's a really good one. And you'll get some of our actual expertise on this one. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Do you agree with the hoodie, Bill Belichick, who told the Pat McAfee show that the media can't be trusted by accurately reporting a player's draft stock because it's the agents and not the teams that talk to the media about where players may go? Has that been your experience in covering drafts? Belichick said teams do sometimes leak information, but usually late in the process after decisions have been made.
Well, I think I agree from one standpoint. Agents are always going to have their clients' best interests at heart, and they're going to play the game, and they're going to have connections with media, and you just have to be aware of that. I don't think you ever want to be naive or gullible to fall for anything that doesn't seem plausible. But at the same time, I think that what this comment does, and I think if I were working for Our Lads, if I were working for one of these draft-driven publications or entities that did tons of homework, if I were Dane Brugler, for instance, commits his life to doing a responsible, professional, thorough job of evaluating talent and ranking it accordingly, I'm offended. Because, and I think this maybe reflects the way Bill Belichick sometimes is maybe accused of being out of touch with the way the industry has changed a little bit. He's 72 years old, whatever. But, and you read ESPN.com story on that if you want to get more about the Bill Belichick dilemma. But this does those guys a disservice by assuming that they're influenced by agents or they're getting, you know, not accurate information. I think what I'm getting from Dane Brugler is what Dane Brugler thinks about his trained eye after years of doing this. And a guy like that doesn't really, he's not going to be overly influenced by the opinions that agents with agendas will have, that executives with agendas will have. Agents aren't the only ones with agendas. The reason that teams leak things late in the process after decisions have been made is because they want to affect the process. That don't be naive about that either. So I did not necessarily care for everything that Bill Belichick had to say about this because I think it did one thing, and it didn't take into account the people that actually these days do this job, make a living at evaluating draft prospects.
Go ahead, Dustin. I'm sorry.
All right. I was going to let you go, so I waited. Okay. No. I found this conversation to be riveting. And, you know, maybe all of us as football fans will even learn more. Bill Belichick, I believe, is going to work in the media next year. And Bill Belichick may work in the media moving forward. He's not going to coach next year. And by agreeing to go, not only go on this show, he's also going to be part of their draft spectacular.
That's right.
And you know, this guy has forgotten more than all of us combined will ever know. He is that good at what he does. So I found this very interesting. And yes, I'm sure this is all agent driven because agents are driven by the commissions that they get from their clients. Agents don't work for the teams. Agents work for the players.
As a person that has covered a ton of drafts in my life, I can guarantee you that I've never listened to an agent tell me something and felt like that wasn't in his best interest. I think you've got to keep that in mind, as David mentioned. I also think, you know, Belichick's a little different now. He has a closed shop. There's not a lot of guys whispering a lot of information from New England over the years. And I think that it's fascinating to see the draft process up close when you're covering these things, when you go to player workouts, when you know who the different scouts are for the team you cover, and you develop individual relationships so you can call some guy up who's working on players in California and run a couple names by him. There are a lot of scouts out there that are called phone scouts. In other words, they want to get on the phone and they want their buddy at another team to let them know that, yeah, that guy can play. Oh, well, we all agree that that guy's the better one. How do you rate this guy over that guy? There is all sorts of that conversation going on as part of the process of a draft. You go into a draft, you need to know who's taking a player ahead of you, who's taking a player behind you, what player teams might jump you for. There is all this information, and there are literally hundreds of people that are covering all this stuff. And if you do it long enough, you develop individual relationships where you can call a guy up and you can talk to him about what they're going to do or what they see as potential options. And then you use everything that you've learned over the course of the whole offseason, including what may have been said a month or two ago, in terms of then figuring out what are the candidates, who are the players that they're most interested in drafting. It's a really fun thing to do. You talk to a lot of people around the league. You get to know a lot of people. People come into town and then they leave town. And, you know, you would be surprised at how open some people are. I don't agree with Bill's idea that no one says anything until the draft is actually happening. But I will tell you a story. The night before a draft, I got on the phone with Mark Hatley, the then general manager, right? He wasn't officially general manager. He was, I think, the personnel director of the Bears, and he was the man that ran the draft. And he told me that they had gone back and broke down every player and that Deuce McAllister was the guy that they were most they were hardest on, they felt was going to be the best pro, and that they were going to take Deuce McAllister. And so in the next day's paper, I wrote a Deuce McAllister story and said that the Bears had gone back and looked at it. You know, we had talked about it, and he told me that I could write it. And I wrote it, and, you know, a source close to the team type of thing. At any rate, David Terrell ended up falling, and they took David Terrell. And then they doubled back, and he said they tried to trade into the first round several times to get Deuce McAllister. But, you know, we had Deuce McAllister on the back page. I'm driving home from the draft. I'm listening to the score. And Jesse Rogers is on, and he is like, look at these reporters. They know nothing. How could this guy write that, you know, he fell to 26 to New Orleans. This guy can't play. But he just badmouthed me for that pick. And I'm sitting there like, literally the man told me that the night before. I don't know what better source on the draft you could get. That happens.
Too bad they didn't have the text line back then, probably.
No, it's probably good probably they didn't not, have yeah. it. Yeah, you just ignore it.
You could
that
have been anonymous. No. Maybe you fax that in?
Like you do?
No.
Did you text things anonymously?
No, everybody no. knows the end of the last
I believe I turned off the radio or put on something else. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
And this crowd saying, Kobe, 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 you got to love it.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of The Score, appropriately chanting the name of the star player last night, and that was a changing of the game.
Well,
we said that a year ago because Zach LaVine had a great game.
He did have a great game a year ago against the Raptors, and Kobe White was just as outstanding last night against the Hawks. If people were wondering and they looked at it, a matchup between, okay, if Trae Young gets hot and Kobe White gets hot, who's better? Kobe White was much better. Kobe White was twice the player, almost scored twice the output of Trae Young, who didn't have it last night, was erratic and didn't score for a very long time, and then he didn't help his team after that. When you look at the comparative price tags for those two players, Kobe White is one of the best bargains in the NBA, relatively speaking. He just signed a 3-year, $36 million contract. When he's capable of doing what he did last night, what's that worth
to NBA teams.
Mm.
Thank goodness for the Bulls. He's locked up. Doesn't become a unrestricted free agent until 2026. Next two seasons, Coby White is here. And I think you can expect him to continue to emerge into a complete player the way he was last night.
Yeah, he has had a fantastic season. He has been as big a story as anyone on the roster. You know, I know DeMar DeRozan remains the closer and remains a guy that can do great things. I understand all that. But Coby coming into the season, we didn't know exactly what they had. He hadn't actually lived up to his draft status. And then you get into this position where Zach LaVine is out, and he doesn't really seem like he wants to be in ever, frankly. And then he opts for the surgery. I'm not picking on Zach. I'm just saying that guy is the max player, and he's not available to you from early on in the season, really. And then you're scrambling. And what we've seen is Coby White take control of his career and change the way that you view him. And he had, I mean, is he the comeback player of the year? We'll see what the voting ends
he'll
up.
He'll get a lot of momentum.
He's a hell of a player.
He'll get a lot of support. And I think when you look at what happened last night, you appreciate the single game performance, even though officially it's the dumbest thing in the world. The NBA doesn't record those statistics. But we saw what we saw, and it left a mark indelibly. I think big picture, you take a step back, and you wonder, do the Bulls, is this part of the reason they're going to feel so compelled to trade Zach LaVine, pick up some of that contract if they have to move him? Because does his presence impede Coby White's development and progress and continued emergence? You could make that argument, and I think the Bulls eventually will come to that conclusion. You know, Coby White will become the most improved player in the NBA largely because he had to, largely because Zach LaVine wasn't on the court. And we saw what he's capable of last night, and I think they're going to want to see where that heads.
It's interesting. I think that, you know, between Io and Coby, they look like they're heading in the right direction at those positions. I don't know what you do with Patrick Williams. I don't know how you feel about him. I think, you know, a lot of times we talk about different players and we talk about guys at different points in their career, and we are missing a lot of information. So, in other words, we sit here and we talk about, well, you know, Braxton Jones can't be the left tackle. If you're drafting Caleb Williams, you better upgrade that position. But we know that they've invested a couple of years of starts in him.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how he is in the meeting room, how hard he's working, what the tape is telling you about his improvement. We don't know how the individual coaches feel about his competition level. There are a lot of kind of missing pieces when you're evaluating guys. And I think that and we've asked Bigsy this a few different times, like, what do they think of him? He's going into his third season. Do they want him? Do they want to see him? And is he capable of taking a step up? And does that kind of get you off the hook for having to address that position in this draft?
So Braxton Jones, yeah, I think that's a good question. Yeah, I think you don't know what you have, and I would not let that. I would not let Braxton Jones get in the way of drafting an offensive tackle if that's the question.
I mean, I'm saying at number 9.
Yeah,
that's where you would get
right.
It.
Yeah,
if you have Roma Dunze on the board and there's an offensive tackle you like, what do you do?
It depends on who the offensive tackle is. I think if it's Joe Walt, you probably take
him. It's not Joe Walt. He's going to be gone, in my opinion.
Okay, then I think it's probably not going to be somebody who's good enough to do that.
If he fell, that'd be great.
Right.
Like I say, take the gift.
Right.
But my point is simply, we don't know how the Bulls felt about Coby, what they think about his work habits, what they think. I think Coby has always shown the ability to knock down some jumpers. He's like a schoolboy legend, a record setter in North Carolina. And then he comes to the NBA, and, you know, I'm sure he's gone through a difficult road. But did they see this coming? Did they know that they had a guy that was ready to step up? Because he stepped up this year. So I think those are the kind of questions that you have to ask. Do they look at Patrick Williams, and do they see something that we don't see when we watch him play? And I think you know, again, I'm talking about how much it means to him, how hard he's working, what he's trying to get done, and what they're telling him, and can he repeat what he's been told? Can he take coaching? These are all things that, unless you're on the inside talking to these people and getting to watch some practice and see how people instruct him and what's going on, that's the kind of information that I think is fascinating when you look at the Bulls and their way forward. But Dustin's right. A lot of money wrapped up on guys not playing. A
lot of money.
Mm-hmm. It's too bad. All right, we got Bruce Levine. We're going to talk Cubs with Bruce. It's Mully. It's Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.